Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Welcome to the Cosmo Pharmaceuticals Full Year Results 2014 conference call. I am Sharon, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to Mr. Mauro Ajani, Chairman of Cosmo Pharmaceuticals. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning. First of all, I would like to thank you all to be here in such an important day for the company, because we are going to present the balance sheet and the figures of the 2014 that was for the company a very record year. I do believe that we are going to do the best that we can just to put the 2015 even better than 2014. Thank you. I leave Alessandro now for the presentation.
Thank you. Good morning. Oh, sorry. Then I have to sit, yes. Or I can go. Yes. Morning. As we said, it has been a very good year. Our operating revenues increased 41.2% to 79.6 million. Our pre-tax profit increased by 51.9% to 108.9 million euro. This was also due to the sale of remaining Santhera shares, which generated a gain of 65 million. Our profit after tax increased by 6.7% to 73.3 million. And this is because we had to pay an exit tax in order to move, as you are aware, the corporate seat from Italy to Luxembourg. Although, as an overall number, this may look very high, because it was 25.3 million, you have to consider that what we had to pay is basically the Italian taxes on capital gain, which is equal to 1.37%. So it's a very low tax, but it has been paid basically on our market cap. So that's the reason why we ended up with such a very significant number. The products are doing very well. Uceris sales overtook 150 million, and we expect this to increase even further. And in fact, if we listen to the forecast from our licensee Salix, recently acquired by Valeant, this sales should increase. We had an excellent market performance of Lialda. Lialda is the fastest growing ulcerative colitis tablet and currently has a 33% share market in the 5-ASA US market. We have 6 clinical trials ongoing, so we expect a lot of news to materialize soon in the course of 2015, and we will be a little bit more precise in this respect. The development of SIC-8000 has been completed because we have filed with the FDA the 510K, which is required to get approval, as Luigi will tell you a little bit more in a detail in a second. And as you know, our compound CBO-301 was regained from Valeant, and in the meanwhile, we successfully ended up the phase 2 meeting with the FDA, so we're heading towards the completion of the development soon. I'll pass now the words to Chris, that will tell you a little bit more in detail about the figures of 2014.
Alex already explained that revenues went up substantially. If you look at our revenues, you have to distinguish between the type of revenues which are the current revenues and the extraordinary type of revenues. On the current side, we had a very nice growth. Our cost of sales increased slightly over last year. Main factor of this, a lot less than our operating revenues, is that on the one hand, we have nice margins. On the other hand, on a part of the goods that we manufacture, we have the supplier delivering the goods to us, so there's very little cost effectiveness to this. The research and development costs moved up more than in the year behind, but still, if you look, and I think it's important that we, if we look from a detailed perspective, the research and development costs moved up because we had a cost on the methylene blue trials and on the end of the CBO-301 trials. If you look at the SG&A, that increased substantially. by 116% to 16.7 million. Main reason for this is that we implemented an ESOP last year, and the ESOP is being charged to the SG&A in this specific case. In absolute numbers, it is still a relatively low number. As a consequence, the EBITDA increased by 42% to 31 million. And as Alex explained, if you look at our taxes that we paid this year, they're abnormally high. And I'm looking forward to next year. We won't be having these type of one-off tax expenses anymore. So the profit after tax only increased by 6.7% to 73 million. I think what's important to say is the company is continuing. If you look at the revenue side, it's transformation from a company that originally, when Mauro took it over and started building on it, it was an entire contract drug manufacturing company. In the meantime, practically the entire revenues, except for 11 million, are generated by the products we created ourselves. I think this shows a steady path, the company moving away from a contract drug manufacturer to a company that is relying on its own products. If you look at the statement of the financial position, then it's still such that we are very heavily cash and investment driven. 78% of our total assets are cash and liquid financial assets. In part, this has got to do is that we're not an asset intensive company anyway, because we have a manufacturing entity which is relatively small in absolute values, and we don't activate any cost except for the cost which we did for a certain time for budesonide. But besides this, there's very little assets, if you want. The assets are the people and some of the projects, and these projects are not in any way or form put onto the balance sheet. As a consequence of this, you have intangible assets declining by 37% because we were writing off in an accelerated fashion what we had spent in the phase three for budesonide, and it's come down to 10 million now. Total liabilities increased, and this is, I think, it's pretty much of a one-off situation as well. Because of the tax liabilities, these were assessed in the course of this year and are going to be paid in the month of June. And as you know, in the course of the moving of the seat from Italy to Luxembourg, we had to grant all existing shareholders the rights to tender, basically to sell all their shares to us. And this was at the 6 months average price, which at the time it occurred was 156.03, which was substantially higher than the share price was at that time. And looking at this moving forward, I have to admit there were moments when we said, wow, are all our shareholders going to throw all our shares at us? Because in principle, you could have arbitraged. You could have purchased shares on the market and tendered them to us. But there were very, very few people who did this. Only 104,000 shares were tendered out of 14 and something million, so just a very small amount of shares. But it does mean that this transaction is going to be executed in the month of May, April, the end of April, and it does mean that we have to pay this, and this is an additional 13 million that we have to pay for this HSO. So that's why our liabilities moved up, but we expect, again, that this is sort of a one-time effect. Once we've paid them, we will be going back to a normal situation. Equity declined by 30.8%. On the one hand, we paid a dividend last year, and then we repurchased a substantial amount of shares. You will recall at the beginning of the year, we had this share repurchase where we gave each of the shareholders the ability of selling the shares at the time at around 90 francs. So those who kept them did well. We canceled 576,000 shares, reducing our equity, but we then increased the nominal value of the shares to 26 cents and maintained the equity level. To date, we own, including these 104,000 shares that we have repurchased, we own 213,000 treasury shares, which in one way or the other is reserve ammunition. We'd have to wait and see what we're going to be doing with those. We had a decline of total assets financed by equity to 67%, which may sound like a lot, but it's still a very nice way of financing your entire balance sheet. I think from a cash flow perspective, what this slide shows you is that there were a number of very big cash inflows and outflows, primarily, of course, on the investment side with the sale of the Santara shares, and then on the other hand, the repurchase of shares in the market. So this, you can see that there was quite a lot of activity taking place in the market. Looking forward, we have a slightly lower cash position than we had last year, but we've invested our assets in market. Let me just go back here. One of the important components here is on the total assets, 30% of the assets are invested in U.S. dollars and 70% are invested in euro. If you look at our balance sheet or our operating costs, are practically all of our operating costs except for selective clinical trials are in euros. And selective clinical trials, of course, those that we have in the U.S., those are in dollars, but we have no revenue and no cost, which are Swiss franc orientated. So we were not affected, except for the translation component on our shares. From an operating perspective, the upheaval you've had on the Swiss franc has not affected us in any way or form. Okay, Alex, I'll pass on over to you.
Thank you. Now, this session is about a very quick update on the products that we already have on the market. We think it's just nice to show you how they're currently performing. You know, Lialda, that has been licensed to Shire, has been showing these numbers. Net sales 2013, $529 million. 2014, $633 million. U.S. market share moved to from 29 to 33%. And our income has gone 28.8% in 2013 and 22.8% in 2014. The reason why you've seen a decline here is because you may remember that we had a cap on royalties. So we reached the royalty on the cap, but we continue to manufacture. And according to our agreement, our manufacturing agreement is substantially a royalty agreement. Uceris, net sales in 2013, the year of the launch, $66.3 million. In 2014, more than $150 million. Cosmo income in 2013, $16.5 million. In 2014, $45 million. And we will hopefully see this increase as sales ramp up. You may recall that the product, our budesonide MMX product, is called Uceris in the U.S., but called Cortiment in the rest of the world. For the rest of the world, it has been licensed to Ferring, except for some selected country. And here we're moving very, very quick because we have already submitted marketing authorization in Australia, Israel, and selected Middle East countries, then Brazil, South Africa, Russia, and Mexico. Submission in Switzerland, Turkey, United Arab Emirates, Chile, Canada to follow. We expect those approvals in 2015, and I think it's nice just to show you how basically the Cosmo activities are widening up and start to cover also the world outside the U.S. This is something that we have already said, but given the fact that it's going to be an interesting piece of news later on in the presentation, I think it's just nice to recap what we intend to do to continue our growth. We intend to expand the GI pipeline, and we will tell you again in a second how we're doing this because several things are coming to completion. We intend to expand activities to other therapeutic areas, and we intend to execute equity for product deals. You may recall what we mean by equity for product deals. This is kind of a deal that we made with Santaros, where we licensed the product and received shares in exchange, shares that we can subsequently sell when they hopefully appreciate upon the approval of our products. So we are mainly interested in doing deals with companies that have shares whose price may hopefully appreciate because of the approval and because of the performance of our product. We did that with Santaros. We did that with Salix, although the deal was subsequently terminated. And we will tell you in 20 minutes how we intend to continue doing it basically by ourselves. We like to, if we are able to create as much value as possible in-house and enter into deals only when value maximization and risk reduction can be achieved. And again, we will tell you in a second how we intend to do it in a relatively short time frame. Now, I would like to pass the word to Luigi so that Luigi can tell you a little bit more about the products that we have currently under development. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. A short update on the development pipeline, starting from the first from the GA franchise, and is rifamycin. You know that we have a phase 3 antibiotic ongoing in the pivotal clinical trial. After the first positively concluded clinical trial by Centaurus, we have the second pivotal trial that is still ongoing, managed by Falk. Well, we moved the clinical trial from India, where it was originally located, to Latin America in order to have the chance to fulfill the 200 patient recruitment that we need to achieve in order to have the clinical trial concluded. And the good news is that the recruitment in Latin America is finally started. And so we plan to stay inside of the time that are depicted here. For the other indication, we remember that we have two other indications ongoing. The first is uncomplicated diverticulitis. It's still under phase 2 trial. We plan to fulfill at least the interim analysis by the end of this year in order to know what is the best way to conclude the way for the indication. And we are starting for the new indication, that is IBS, where we have assessed the new formulation, that is 600 milligram, and we are testing in a phase 1 safety study in order to start with the clinical development. Then we have a good project that is very interesting and very exciting, that is use our MMX technology to deliver antibody in the gut. We start working on this project for now, waiting for the achievement of the API that is designed to be given to us in the second part of this year. We start with a mimetic product in order to assess formulation and analytical method, because we are entering in a new area of development. No one have oral peptide and protein application. And so in this case, we have to make the pioneering work. And we start to make the pioneer. Endoscopy. Last time we presented methylene blue update. Now we have a second product in the slide that is SIC. Okay. SIC is a submucosal injection composition. This one. So finance is not science. You understand how. Well, we have two presentations that we are submitting in this day to the FDA, because yesterday we sent a dossier to our U.S. agent to be submitted Monday or Tuesday next week. And we have a plastic composition or a vial, glass vial. These are two presentations that could be useful for achieving the goal that I wanted to discuss just after this. The first is to give you an update about methylene blue. You know that methylene blue allowed to make evident lesion that we could have on the mucosal layer. And in this way, you can increase the detection rate in the area that you use to spray in order to have a much evident lesion location. But the product is, if you use the spray technique that is today applied in several countries, you have three times more time to use. And this is, for the very intensive endoscopy unit, a big problem. Well, our application is, first of all, removing the possibility that the endoscopist don't see an area of suspicion, because we are staining all the colonic mucosal area, making evident all the lesion that you can find. And in this way, the detection rate increases much more. And what is more important for the management of the endoscopy unit the time of endoscopy is exactly the same because the patient is prepared at home. There is no need to have a nurse and personnel of the hospital that could dedicate time to the patient for preparation. That's a really important thing. And these are some examples of performances of our technology, and you can see that there are incredible lesions that cannot be seen without this kind of technology, also because you have to consider that these lesions, some of them particularly, are no more than 3 millimeters. 3 millimeter flat polyp without any protruding tissue. It's impossible to be seen if you don't have a detection method. Well, what is the situation? We are conducting a global clinical trial. We expanded the originally 13 sites in order to gain time and to finish the recruitment in the time that is indicated in the slide. And now we have 20 sites that are working on it. The results are, for now, of course, blind, but in terms of detection rate, there is a swap increase of the detection rate that is still registered up to now. That is confirming the assumption that was based at the beginning of the technology. We have to recruit 1,300 patients, and more than half have been already recruited. In terms of regulatory assessment, we already define with the European agency and with the American agency what is the path to follow, and in both the cases, we have an agreement with them how to manage the data that are coming out from this clinical trial. Let's tell me that we manage a control unit inside of the company in order to be ready once we finish the last patient out in a very short time, that is a couple of weeks, to prepare a report and so immediately have access to the registration part.
One thing, in respect of this slide, you can see here that Chris will join in a second, so we make it a little bit more interactive. I think this is very interesting, and especially in light of the slides that will follow and that will be commented by Chris. Just gives you an overview on how much a colonoscopy costs in the U.S. You see that there's a dramatic difference between one state and the other, because you can go here. The lowest that you see is $3,500 in Kansas City, but you see also $8,500 in the New York state. We've been recently discussing in other presentation that the average cost of a colonoscopy in the U.S. was $2,500, and we probably have to go rediscuss this belief, because we may end up concluding that in reality the average cost is probably higher than $2,500. But you know, the reason why we discuss this and we try to understand exactly how colonoscopies are priced in the U.S. is because when we will hopefully have methylene blue succeed through the clinical development, one would need to wonder how this is going to be priced in the U.S. And there's a question that we normally ask when we're presenting methylene blue, which is the following. But in light of this number, the average is going to be probably higher, but let's just assume that the average is really $2,500 for a colonoscopy. Now, if with methylene blue you increase 10% chances of your polyps being detected, given the fact that not each polyp turns into a tumor, but a tumor was a polyp and before, and that therefore the only reason why you take a colonoscopy is because you want to have your polyps removed. If you have a 10% increase in the detection rate, how much would you be willing to pay for methylene blue? Would it be a safe stance to say that if the average price is $2,500, you will be willing, as a patient that undergoes the colonoscopy, you will be willing to pay $250 for something that increases 10% the detection rate? You can make your own personal guess whether this would be or not be an appropriate pricing for methylene blue in the U.S. But let's see now what Chris is going to tell you in the next slide.
I think Alex has pointed out the tricky part of the whole thing. We're talking about treatment which doesn't exist so far, so we have to navigate an entirely new price scenario. And this is what we've done here specifically. This is a U.S. number on top. There's 15 million colonoscopies. 16% of the people in the U.S. are taking antidepressants, and those are currently excluded from the trial, so we've been prudent and excluded them from the market potential. We've assumed that market penetration will be going up to 20%. It's an assumption. As you saw, the pricing ranges differ enormously, and probably if you have an area where a colonoscopy is very cheap, then maybe you won't do it. But in areas where it's very expensive, then the marginal cost of these is very low. And if you can get an increment in polyp detection, then it's very likely that you're going to be penetrating the high-priced market a lot more than the lower-priced market. So this is something to consider. In average, we've decided from a model basis to go $120. Why $120? Because from our contacts in the U.S., we've been told that as long as you stay under 130, nobody's going to blink an eye. So this is sort of, but this is a gut-feeling perspective.
The suggestion was that if you stay under $150, make difficult that we have some argue or some concern by the payers.
Yeah. And if you transform these, and then you transform the same thinking to the rest of the world, but of course at a lower price, and we're assuming $120 in the U.S., $50 in the rest of the world, and in the Europe, and $30 in the rest of the world, then you can still get to some very substantial total revenues. So this points out to where the potential for this drug is. Specialty is we're looking at treatment of a disease which is going to progress enormously. In the United States, you have 93,000 diagnoses of colon cancer every year. In Europe, you have 250,000. Even though Europe is only 1.5 times larger, you have nearly three times as many colon cancer diagnoses because in the U.S., colonoscopies are still much more prevalent. In Europe, you, however, have a state-held system which can sort of dictate to its people what to do. And the colon cancer costs, if you have to treat the patient that has colon cancer, are so high that it really makes a hell of a lot of sense to reduce the risk of catching colon cancer by doing effective colonoscopies. So this presents a business case which will have substantial health economics perspectives.
Back to...
Yeah,
with you again.
Yes, thank you. It's important to detect the lesion. It's much more important that you remove safely. And that's why we created the SIC product, because it was an unmet clinical need from the endoscopist to have a system to remove the polyp. Once you have a polyp, you have to remove it, and there are two main technologies that you can use. The first is called EMR. That is endoscopic mucosal resection. It consists in super elevating the second layer of the mucosa, because the mucosa is consisting of two very tightly packed and close layers of cell. The layers of cell are separated by an intercellular medium, very, very thin, and if you are not able to divide the two layers, you risk that when you cut the first layer, you cut also the second one. And in this case, you make a perforation. The perforation put in contact the content of the lumen of the colon with the other part of the body, and immediately you have a superinfection. And in this case, you must be immediately addressed to the surgery department. That's the problem. Well, you can use the EMR, that consists in injecting this kind of liquid, when in contact with the body, became jelly. Jelly means that is creating a cushion that allows the endoscopist to operate in a very safe environment. First, because it's looking where the mucosal is finishing and starting the other layer. And second, because allow to use the snare. The snare is that is that instrument that is like a well, I don't know in English, come possiamo dire cappio in inglese. Okay, lace that take the polyps and take it away in this case. But there is another technology that could be applied once the polyp are bigger than this. This is applied when the polyp are less than 2 centimeters. If you have a big polyp, you have to use the ESD, the endoscopic submucosal dissection. It consists in making some injection around the polyps in order to super elevate the area, and in this case, allowing for the endoscopist to use the cutter, like in this case, or the snare if he's unable to take the polyp inside. In this case, you can remove it. Well, both this technology are currently used by the endoscopist, but they present the risk of perforation that is particularly increased in this bladder, that is the ESD. So, what is the characteristics that the fluid like this able to create a cushion in situ has to have? First, that it should be have a low viscosity because you have to inject it. Inject it means not through the syringe, but through a catheter that is long 2.20 meters. That is an incredible resistance to flow because of the small volume also. And in this case, you have to go through all this length in order to arrive to destination. Then you have to provide a cushion that is time-lasting. It could resist for at least 15, 30, 40 minutes that allow the endoscopist to make a sure endoscopy operation. And then it's important because it's blue to define what is the area where the endoscopy has to operate. And this should be differentiated for the surrounding area. And the presence of a dye allows the endoscopist to see what are the border of the lesion that has to be cut and to distinguish between the mucosal area and the surrounding area. And then should be, of course, safe and biocompatible and should have a price that could be convenient. Well, in terms of price, let me say that today in Europe there is a possible alternative that is represented by hyaluronic acid. But hyaluronic acid has a cost of 50 euro for less than 4 milliliters. Our proposition is 10 milliliters, and Chris told you before that the price is more or less the same or even lower. In this case, you gain at least the double volume. The other possibility is you have a very practical system because it's a plastic pool. You can break the cup and immediately take the syringe in order to operate in terms of pushing into the catheter. But what is the difference with the other present composition? There is one that is in America has been taken as a comparative product by the FDA that cannot be used without a pump. What you see here is a pump. You see the hand that is moving the pump in order to create the pressure because you have to win the resistance of two point and more meter to be run. In this case, you can arrive to 100 atmosphere pressure. I don't know if you are safe to have in your gut 100 atmosphere.
During the colonoscopy.
Yeah. During the colonoscopy.
No.
Well,
I don't think that anybody is surprised by the fact that the product is not marketed. The product is approved but not marketed.
Yeah. I told that we finished just in this day the development. The development was done by the biocompatibility study that are required by the ISO guideline and also by the 5 preclinical study that has been agreed with the agency. 5 preclinical studies, 3 of them were for tolerability in the sense that we have to show that the product don't make any damage to the tissue where we inject. And the second, particularly important, is the feasibility. Because the FDA wants that we prove on the animal model, and we use the pig, that is an accepted animal model for this kind of study, that once you use it, you have a facilitated resection by the endoscopist. The result of this study that we publish is that we use 55% less volume of injection than the other method. And this is another incredible result for our development. So what is the schedule? Now we are filling the 510K in the United States. We plan to have the approval in 3 to 4 months, so by, let's say, July. And then in June, we want to make the same operation in the European market using the CE mark procedure. The CE mark procedure requires more or less 6 months of time to be approved. So we can say that by the end of the year, we could have both of the area, geographic area, with the possible presence of this product on the market.
Thank you, Luigi. Now we will have Chris telling you a little bit more about the economics of the, as I see, the important thing that I'm sure that all of you notice is that in making the projection for methylene blue, we have been very conservative because actually in our model, the price is 5% of the price, of the average price of a colonoscopy. Those $120 were exactly 5% of the average price. And you will see that we think we've been very conservative also in the possible economics of the SIC once on the market.
I think the critical question is in how many of all polyps will you just look at the market. Basically, there's in a phase two, we found polyps in 1.75 polyps of all patients. Now, some patients who had none, but many had many more, so on average is 1.75. Question is, how many of these would you need to take out with the SIC? There's people who say, I'll only take out the really tricky ones, but there's also some people who say, once I start using this and operating, I'm going to be using it on everyone. Because if you take out a polyp that is like this, and you cut it with a snare, you're not taking out the root part, the bottom part, which is still in the mucosa. And what Luigi pointed out before is if you take out a polyp and you then go through histological process and you detect active cells on the border of what you took out, that means you have to operate because it means you left something in the colon and you don't want to do that. You prefer taking out a bit more than a bit less because otherwise you have to redo the procedure. If you're careful, as a consequence, we believe that there will be a greater use of the SIC than merely these 20%. And this led us to this calculation with a market penetration which goes up to 50%, but albeit of a relatively small percentage of all polyps taken out. But as you can see, in the end, we're looking for a revenue in the area of 350 million. These are just numbers, but give you an indicative size of what this market potentially could be looking like at low-cost basis. We're talking, as Luigi said before, from a comparator to what's in the market, substantially less expensive than we have today.
Let me tell you one thing also, which is very important. We just said that these are the economics of the SIC. This is not precise in absolute terms, because if you see what we've mentioned in brackets, we have seen, we've said, this is the market potential estimates for colonoscopies only. But the fact is that we think that you will be able to use the SIC to remove tissues and polyps, not only in the colon. Luigi, you may wish to say just a few words about this.
Well, in our test, we use the SIC not only for the colonoscopy, but also for the gastroscopy or for the endoscopy of the esophagus. In the United States, particularly, there is a high degree of esophagus cancer and esophagus polyps because there are the Barrett disease that is much more diffused than in Europe. And after the agreement with the FDA, FDA asked us
to apply the same SiC also in other areas that is not colon. And that's why we make five studies for tolerability and safety proven. In this case, we are able to use the same drug, the same SiC composition, or all the other...
You're talking to the microphone.
Okay, for all the other applications as well. So, sorry.
So until now, we have a forecast made by colon or area, but we can also expand our forecast, including the gastroscopy and the esophago endoscopy.
And let me tell you also that this would not require an additional approval path, in the sense that once the SIC has been approved, the projection you've seen are for colonoscopies only, but we expect that to be used also in several other applications with the same with the same marketing approval. Okay. Now we are going to talk about the dermatology pipeline, and we have the pleasure to introduce you a new name in the corporate world of Cosmo, and I hope you all like it because there's going to be a quite some study behind it. There you go. Cassiopeia. This is the name and the brand of the company which we have expressly created for our dermatology pipeline. It's a dedicated company. Now you will hear, when we will talk about dermatology, we will only talk about Cassiopeia. Cassiopeia is currently owned 100% by Cosmo Pharma. It has a very nice pipeline, and we are also presenting today for the first time the brand names of the two products, which will hopefully go to the market before the others. One is a product that we call Winlevi. It's a product for acne. One is a product that's called Breezula for alopecia, androgenetic alopecia. For the other two ones, we still have our code names, CB0602 and CB0604. I hope you also like the brand names. And before telling you what we would like to do with Cassiopeia, I think it's important that I again let Luigi introduce you, but very, very quickly this time through the main products in the pipeline. Just let me tell you this, which is important for you to know. Our main product will be a product for acne, Winlevi. No new chemical entity in acne has been seen in the U.S. market in the last 15 years. So there's quite a hype about the fact that our new product is completing its clinical development, because a new product for acne, and especially with the mechanism of action that we will tell you about in a second, is something which dermatologists are very much looking for. And the U.S. derma market is the most important market in the world, because just to tell you something, a product for acne in the U.S. would be reimbursed, whereas it would not be reimbursed in Europe. So this is why the derma market is very, very important in the U.S. Consider that dermatologists normally prescribe 2 to 3 products at the same time for acne, and therefore they're all very much looking for new therapeutic options. And here we're not shooting from the hips. We're telling you things that we've been carefully inquiring for. Consider that dermatology has had the lowest product failure rate in clinical trials, and that the probability of success in phase 3 clinical trial is very high. And especially, hopefully, for our Winlevi product, because as Luigi will tell you in more detailed fashion in a second, this is a product that has shown already statistical significance in phase 2. The market has important cosmetic and lifestyle implications for reasons that you all know very well. We can tell you before an introduction on the product itself, just a little bit about the market dynamics for acne. Chris, would you like to comment the slide?
Yeah, just basically on the macro numbers, again, perspective is 85% of all people between 12 and 24 get acne.
get acne, and it is characterized as a chronic disease, which is why in the U.S. it is also being reimbursed. 17 million people have acne, and 35 million prescriptions are being written. What's interesting is that today's, typically a physician, of course, will prefer to prescribe a topical application, but still there's quite a number of all prescriptions are being written for oral applications because the topical ones don't work, which give you an indication of how much, how welcome a new topical and effective drug is going to be in the market. What you've got here is a breakdown of the overall market. It's only growing by 1%, which is, I think, a question a bit of the age structure of all of our Western nations where things are growing relatively slow. But still, at $3 billion on a worldwide basis, it is a market with a lot of opportunities, especially because there's been nothing new in the market. And, of course, something new will be welcomed by all of the physicians. PG.
Just a brief update on our Winlevi product. First of all, it's a new chemical entity. It's 15 years that no one chemical entity appear in the acne market. And so it's by itself a new. And also, you have a different mechanism of action than the current drug. Chris before says that there are antibiotics, retinoid, and antibiotic oral. There is no one that has the activity that we claim for this kind of product, that is a downregulation of the sebum production and, for this kind of reason, the anti-inflammatory property. Because what happens when you have the acne? First of all, under the androgen stimula, your sebaceous gland start in overproducing sebum. The sebum is invading the follicle and also the area surrounding this, and in this way create an environment that is the ideal substrate for the colonization of Propionibacterium acnes. Propionibacterium acnes is a special strain of microbial species that is invading the very lipidic environment that are created by the sebum. And in this case, create with the down product of this kind of bacterial fermentation an infection and inflammatory also disease. In this way, you have the infection, the inflammation, and also the overproduction of sebum. Well, the other drug that are acting on the same field are, first of all, antibiotics. Antibiotics have the action to fight the strain colonization by the sebum. Or the retinoid is taking care of the inflammation that is generated by the overproduction of bacteria and the byproduct of bacterial metabolization. Well, we have a new mechanism of action. The mechanism of action is if we downsize the sebum production, we provide less substrate for the Propionibacterium acnes, and so we slow down the inflammation that is deriving from this. Because the general pathway is overproduction of sebum and then infection with comedone, papules, pustules, and nodules, and then cyst. When you have cyst, you have quite a permanent lesion because it's very difficult to remove the cyst sign on the face. So what we did was three studies, phase one and phase two, where we tested all the doses that could be used for the phase three. You know what is the aim of the phase two. First of all, assess what is the active dose. The second target is to assess what could be the endpoint for phase three. And in this case, we have information about this. We assess that the 1% BID, morning and evening, is the best treatment schedule. And we also have the data to provide the sample size for the phase three. This has been identified, but what is more important, we don't have any adverse event. The drugs that are active in this field are antibacterial antibiotics that could generate resistance, or drugs like the retinoid that have very heavy side effects and cannot be prescribed, for example, to the young female because of the teratogenic potential of the product. We don't have any teratogenic potential. We don't have any possibility to create resistance. What is important and has been assessed on the over 360 patients that we already treated is that the safety for this product is not a concern. And this is an incredible help for the dermatologist because, as Chris told before, dermatology generally use a polyprescription. The polyprescription means that you could have more than one product prescribed, and inside of the first line polyprescription, I think that our product could take a relevant place. Well, in the phase two, we treated 360 patients, but what is most important, we added the element to design the phase three. We designed two pivotal clinical trials. Each one of it has to treat 700 patients. So at the end, we have more or less 1,400 patients to treat. We want to conduct this clinical trial globally, in U.S. and in Europe. And what is more important, we had the big sample size that will allow, we hope, we would allow to have the statistical significance at the end. Because we obtain, in this second clinical trial, the statistical significance even in 70 patient group. And now we have to obtain the same result in 350 patient group. That is a much more comfortable situation for us. You see that these are the main endpoint, the co-primary endpoint that we have, and the lesion count, and the inflammatory and non-inflammatory lesion count. The constancy is that in this small patient population, we still have the significance, that a condition to have the achieved clinical trial. So we obtained at the end of phase two designation by the agency at the end of January and then start immediately to design the SPA. Special protocol assessment is a sort of agreement that you could have with the FDA where you define what are the level of performance that they could accept in order to give you the approval. And we are now conducting this kind of negotiation with the agency. We plan to fulfill this negotiation by the second quarter this year and start immediately to treat the patient.
Here we can have again Chris introducing you briefly the market dynamics of alopecia, because we said we have Winlevi for acne, but we have Breezula for alopecia, and then Chris will tell you a little bit what our thoughts are.
Yeah, I mean, there is no drug that we get as many questions from desperate men than this. And so alopecia is a very strange. It's not really a disease. It is from a cosmetic perspective, but it affects a lot of people. With 20% of all men and 10% of all women. So it isn't something that only affects men. And Then there has been research done of what do these men do, and it has been found that 17% of all men use at least one substance. However, they don't do hair transplants, right, and they don't wear toupees. So that was a thing of the past. There were selective people who did this. Now, either you do this on the drug side or you don't do anything. The current market in the U.S. is $1 billion, which is small. But this is due to the fact that what's been in the market is basically totally antiquated, ineffective. So this is a market which will remain to be developed and conquered. And Luigi is going to tell you how we're going to do that.
Yes, very briefly, because we have now time constraint. The mechanism of action is what I already underlined for the acne indication. There is a sebum control inside of the follicle or the papilla in this case. And this photograph gives you the idea about the activity, because you see that before the treatment and after the treatment, what is the situation of the follicle. There is a clear perspective of a clean area by the overproduction of the sebum that here is evident. And also in this case, you see, where there is also the determination of the shaft diameter of the air. Because if you have an overcrowded situation with the sebum, you have the impair the possibility that your air could receive the nutrients that Eli Candy needs. And so this determines a reduction of the diameter that is the first step of the alopecia. Then the second step is that the air falls down and you have a problem. But first you have to recognize what kind of situation could be determined and what kind of restoring situation could have after the application of our drug. What has been done in this case has been done with the technique of electric penetration inside of the papilla. What is the goal that we have to obtain into the clinical trial? To demonstrate that even without the help of the electricity, you could have the penetration of the drug inside of the papilla and the follicle. Well, first of all, we demonstrated that the product penetrates. This is the blood level after the application of a 5% solution that we use for treating this kind of disease. First, we demonstrated that the product penetrates into the scalp, arrives to the derma, and arrives also into the blood. And then we have to use this treat this kind of disease, that is the Hamilton scale 3 to 5, one of the most diffuse alopecia segment of population.
Sorry, this is a slide which refers, I was just thinking, and I was looking at myself, I was looking at this room, and clearly the potential is beyond 1 billion. I think that we can easily go above that. Now, Chris...
No,
we're not going to do
when
miracles.
The papilla is dead, it's dead, unfortunately. You have to treat it before it's dead.
Yes, exactly. So it's
not major guard.
No miracles, no miracles. Chris would tell you something quickly about the market potential of the third product on HPV genital warts. We have to go. I think we have to accelerate a little bit because it's taking a bit too long.
Okay. Well, more than 20 million people are infected with HPV in the U.S. So this would be around 8%, and around 8% of all. Around 1% is of the sexually have visible genital warts. Now, the HPV can lead to cancer, and as a consequence, should be eradicated. There is a vaccine, but the vaccine A is not effective on people that already have the disease. So it's only on the newer populations, potentially the young children that can be vaccinated. But people like you and me, we cannot be vaccinated anymore. There's no use. And the vaccine is said to have selective consequences on fertility. So it is a market which has around 600,000 transactions every year. Gives you an indication, market size-wise, not enormous, but it is a market that is relatively underserved because the existing drugs are very, very old.
Yeah. Very, very few information about the other two projects that we have into the DERBA pipeline. The anogenital wart is the first. We use a new compound that is tellurium-based, and we want to use it to substitute the vaccination that, as Chris says, has created some problem in some country. These are the possible solutions today with cryotherapy, imiquimod, that is an immunomodifier, or very, very potent drug that the dermatology want to avoid because of the side effect that could be generated. What is the development? We have started at the January. With the phase 2 trial, we plan to complete the trial by the end of this year in order to have the first result, first quarter next year. Then there is another product that is a topical antibiotic. The topical antibiotic is the ideal completion of our pipeline for acne because we have the anti-sebum and now we have also the antibiotics that fight the overproduction of the growth. What is the importance of this kind of antibiotic is the selectivity. It's an antibiotic extremely selective. You know that the antibiotic problem is to generate resistance. Well, you cannot generate resistance if you don't have activity. And this is the activity of this antibiotic that you see is quite ineffective with most of the bacterial strain that are familiar with the human species. But it's particularly active on the Propionibacterium acnes, that is the specialized bacteria that is loading into the sebum generated by the androgen. And you see that here you have very, very efficacy, and this could be more evident in this slide, where you see the erythromycin, that was the older antibiotic used, the clindamycin, that is the current antibiotic used, and you see how potent is the new one in terms of efficacy.
Thank you, Luigi. As you see, now we will tell you what we plan to do with Cassiopeia. And I think that the title of the slide is self-evident, Cosmos Strategic Aims for an IPO of Cassiopeia. You may recall that in prior presentation, we said that we were seriously considering spinning off, partially spinning off, as we will say in a second, the dermatology pipeline. We have set up the stage for this to happen, hopefully in relatively quick terms, and we will tell you in a second why, but we think that it's most important to tell you, first of all, why we want to do that. Because one should wonder, why don't you just keep it in and then continue the development? Why do you think that it makes sense to make such a move? And these are basically exactly the very 5 points that we have discussed in our latest board when we took the decision to try to bring this company public. These are exactly the same strategic considerations that we made at board level and that we're happy to share with you. First of all, because we think that bringing Cassiopeia public, it's just one of the way whereby we can execute our equity for product strategy. With the difference, and this is a good difference, that we don't need to partner up with someone, but we can do it ourselves. So basically, we can do an equity for product strategy with an in-house transaction in the sense that we bring this company public, we control the outcome of the IPO, we see whether that makes sense or not for our shareholders, and if it does, we do it, and we control the process. We also think that it makes sense to have a dedicated company for dermatology, because now, unless you are a very big pharma, we have seen that it pays to be focused. We thought our focus is on GI on one side and endoscopy on the other one, and dermatology on the opposite side, and one may wonder whether dermatology and endoscopy on one side, and sorry, GI and endoscopy on one side and dermatology on the other side do really perfectly match together. So this is why we thought that in order to be focused, it made sense to have a company focused on dermatology. This will enable us, actually it has already enabled us, to recruit specific derma talent because they're happy to work with a dedicated company. If you hire derma specialists, they're more happy to work within the frame of a derma specialty pharma company than of a company that does a lot of things simultaneously. And the fact that we'll be creating a dedicated company will also help us to remunerate their specific performance with dedicated ISOP. So these people that we will bring on board will be happy to see that their results will have an immediate effect also on their potential participation to the company. This is going to help us also to enter into deals using the Cassiopeia shares and papers, which is something that otherwise wouldn't have matched up with the Cosmo shares. We also think that it makes sense to have a dedicated company because, as we told you, the U.S. derma market is the most important derma market in the world. In order to retain maximum value for the benefit of the shareholders, that is a market where you have to try to be present directly with your own commercial infrastructure and network. And where on the Cosmo Pharma side, we have always told you that we prefer to develop in-house and subsequently license or enter into equity for part of the deal, we think that it makes a specific sense for a derma company to set up its own commercial organization in the U.S. because that is where the most important market is. So we think that this makes specific sense if it is done in the frame of a specifically dedicated company. And this is why we thought that we had to do it. Clearly, and this is, I think, it's, again, another very important feature, we are very money-conscious guys, so we're not going to do what companies would ordinarily do. We're not going to set everything up from scratch just for the sake of having it. We will build it over time when the need will come. So we will not set up a fully-fledged company from the beginning because Cassiopeia currently has 4 products under development, and we want to make sure that we enter into the expenses of set up a commercial organization only when we think that we will be very close to the market. There's no reason to do it from now, so there's no reason for the shareholders to incur in major spending. We can save a lot of money if we do it at the appropriate time when we think that the product will have reached an appropriate level of development. And so we thought that because of these 5 reasons, we should have tried to pursue this aim of listing Cassiopeia. What do we think that the main feature of Cassiopeia's IPO should be? Again, we think that the listing, inevitably, has to take place on the Swiss Stock Exchange. We think Swiss is basically home to Cosmo, and therefore needs to be Switzerland also home to Cassiopeia. The timing, we've been targeting 2015. We would like to get it done this year. The structure will be a little bit out of the ordinary, given the fact that Cassiopeia is a 100% subsidiary of Cosmo. Cosmo will fund Cassiopeia for all its needs. And so our intention would be that the placement is all secondary because the company will not need any way to raise money because all the money it will need to fulfill its clinical development path will be already inside the company. Our target is to retain less than 50% of the company, so we would ideally place 51% of the company, and we also expect support from some core Cosmo investors in the sense that we expect and we hope that some of them will be happy investors in Cassiopeia as well. What is our outlook for 2015? We expect historical revenues from contract drug manufacturing, Lialda, Uceris, and Cortiment in the vicinity of 80 million euros. We expect profit stemming out of Cassiopeia's IPO because Cosmo Pharma would be selling shares and therefore would hopefully book profits out of this sale. And we also expect to have potential for further product exploitation upon the SIC approval and final data for methylene blue and rifamycin. We will recall in a second here after the guidance what are the key events for 2015, and you will see it's quite a busy year because we expect, well, filing of SIC has just been done, was done yesterday, as Luigi told you. There's a planned IPO of Cassiopeia. Our half-year financials will be released on July 30, but we expect the results from Phase 3 methylene blue, and we expect the results from Phase 3 rifamycin. So if we go back to the guidance, there you see the, in 2015, you see the 80 million there. You see total revenues. And the reason why, sorry, you see revenues from products under development, you see an 80. And here, this 80 basically, it's in yellow, because if Cassiopeia is listed, and then if you book in profits, which will stem out of the sale that Cosmo Pharma will do of its shares in Cassiopeia, you will need to replace that figure which what will come out from this sales. So this is a guidance that basically does not include what is going to happen in the potential Cassiopeia IPO. These are, as I said, the key events. And so we hope that by the end of 2015, we will have produced, again, some happiness between Cosmo shareholders. Thank you so much.
Are there any questions from the audience, or were there questions from the people on the conference call?
Happy to hopefully answer. Yes.
Can you tell us what the expected tax rate of the listing in Luxembourg is?
The expected tax rate in Luxembourg should be zero. No, in the sense that the company Cosmo Pharmaceuticals is not going to perform any specific activity from Luxembourg. It's not going to charge its subsidiaries for directions fees. And so the revenues that Cosmo Pharma will attain will just be dividends from the subsidiaries, and the dividend will be exempt under the European Union mother-daughter rules. So we don't expect to have a specific tax burden in Luxembourg.
But you expect that your blended tax rate of all operations will be lower?
It will be lower, yes. It will be lower, although the move to Luxembourg has not been executed for purposes of tax optimization, because as you have seen now in the 2014 number, if you take out the one-off taxes that we paid for the exit, the tax burden was relatively low if you consider the overall revenues. And I think shareholders and investors should also appreciate the fact that by switching, I'd say in a rather original fashion to this model of equity for product deal, we would be significantly lowering, if not zeroing, any capital gain tax, because under the participation exemption rules, when we sell a stake, this sale is exempt. I can tell you as an important detail that capital gain tax in Italy is 1.37%, and which is very, very low. And if we will move to Luxembourg, that will be completely zero. So we potentially expect the tax burden at holding level to be zero.
If you segment it, we have taxes of 12.5% on the royalties in Ireland, and we have on the manufacturing, we have the classical Italian tax, which is in the vicinity of 30%. So that is but of course if you break down the revenue, the bulk of our revenue is coming from royalties and not from the manufacturing.
You've shown us the exciting revenue projections you have for Methylene Blue and SIC. I would like to ask a question: how profitable do you think this is going to be at the prices that you foresee?
Please. The manufacturing cost of both drugs is I'm not going to say so low that I don't want to say it, but in principle, you know, in practically all of the pharmaceutical products,
we have margin enough.
Yeah, the manufacturing cost is
we have margin
enough. Very small. Very small.
Very small.
Good morning, Bob Pooler, Valuation App. Just could you give us maybe an update on your marketing strategy for SICK 8000, because that's upcoming. So what are your plans? How do you distribute and actually generate the sales and, of course, the big margin?
Actually, this is a the answer to this question, which is very bright, would require a more thorough analysis of what we plan to do with the GI pipeline. Actually, what we want to see is how we can consolidate that. Basically, we will be willing to wait, given the fact that we intend to execute this Cassiopeia IPO in 2015, we're willing to consolidate completely in-house the value of the GI pipeline by waiting and see what's going to happen with Methylene Blue. Because you understand that if you consider SIC on a standalone basis or rifamycin on a standalone basis or even Methylene Blue on a standalone basis is something, but if you consider SIC plus rifamycin plus Methylene Blue, that would be such a powerhouse pipeline that you can even keep it together and do something with the pipeline together. So I'd rather answer to this question that we will maximize the value for the benefit of the shareholders, but that we want to see how we consolidate the pipeline, because a consolidated pipeline is going to have a value which is going to be completely different from the value of each product on a standalone base. I don't know whether this helps your understanding.
Well, I know you have many moving parts, so, and you're waiting for also for the clinical data, so I understand that. But it's just been sort of touch base if you've...
But certainly, you know, if maybe three or four in a row, if it's going to be licensed, it's going to be licensed when it's going to be completely approved. So whatever revenue will stem out of there, it will be a revenue stemming out from a distribution agreement, not a license agreement.
Okay, and then one other question just on Cassiopeia. What legal entity will that be? Will that also be a Luxembourg?
No, Cassiopeia, it's an Italian company. All the IP was located in an Italian company. And if we would have moved the assets from the Italian company, then the exit tax would have been the ordinary tax rate, and it would have been very expensive. So simply it wouldn't have been worthwhile. Besides, and this is very important, we are in the process of assessing it. Italy has just very recently implemented a completely new piece of legislation which has been mutated by the English patent box. Now we are in the process in Italy of implementing kind of an identical patent box legislation. So we expect that this should go into place. Basically, the tax rate of Cassiopeia in Italy will be competitive with the tax rate in Ireland. And this is something which is going to play a very important role in determining the potential value of the company. Yeah, very significant.
I'm not
quite... We have a question?
I'm not quite sure I understand the timelines. So you're waiting for Methylene Blue clinical results, or until filing, or until approval?
No, we are waiting for the Methylene Blue, the outcome, the clinical outcome, within the second or third quarter 2015. But let me say that, as Luigi explained before, we are totally in control of the process, and we already discussed the special protocol assessment. Means that when we finish the last patient enrollment, we have to wait just 2 weeks for the histology path, and after is enough to push a button, and we will have the result, the outcome. From the CIC is completely different, because we already filed the 10K, because the product allow us to be in the area of the medical device.
And you have already all the interested parties lined up?
A lot. But as Alessandro said before, now make a lot of sense that we try to consolidate all our GI pipelines. Because you have to take in consideration, because many of you know the company very well. What we did in the last 3 years is try to move from a niche market that was the ulcerative colitis. Whether Cosmo, even though is still a small company, is the leader of the market, because if you sum the Lialta plus U series, you can easily see that we are roughly 1 billion revenue. There is no other company that has two products in the market. What we tried to do, and let me say it was, in my opinion, brilliant, without losing expertise, is try to move a company from niche market to the huge market. And thanks to the technology, we couldn't do this because MMX was possible to apply in the colonoscopy area. So you have to take in consideration that when you talk about colonoscopy, the possible market is 30 billion. 30 million is exactly more than 10 times the entire ulcerative colitis market. So at the end, now we are very close to the end of the path, because, as I said, what is really important is not, yes, looking forward is important. Where are we going is really important, but it's very important if you understand where you are. Because if you know your landscape, you can easily see where you can go or where you could go. And let me say that we know where we are. And now our intention is the consolidation of GI pipeline, and after we will see. Maybe we establish a company, maybe we do a deal in the, as we did with Santarus, or maybe we license. Why not?
But let me also recall you this in this respect. I think it may be of help in understanding. Last year, this time, beginning of April, we were approached by Salix. When we signed the deal, that was a $2.4 billion deal just for the U.S. The tax advantages over there were relatively minor, contrary to what one may think. Probably the not more than a few hundred millions, and we were basically providing Salix with the royalty flow of Uceris, because Uceris was already being licensed to Salix. Then rifamycin for U.S. and methylene blue for U.S. Now you can take out from that model whatever the value of the royalty flow of Uceris may have been. You can add SIC, and then you have you can do your own calculation on what could be the value of a potential U.S. GI pipeline on a consolidated basis.
And can I ask again? You are looking for a distribution deal only.
No. We are looking for all. As I said, we are not ready to discuss this point because we are looking only to consolidate the pipeline, to finish the clinical trial, to get as much as we can positive result. But let me say that we should be ready in a couple of months to sell this SAC, but we are not going to do this this year because we already plan a very small trial, even though there is no requirement, because the FDA didn't require any trial, just to show that we are exactly where there is the need. Because in terms of need, in the methylene blue, we are going to enhance and improve something that is already present in the market, because the colonoscopy is the discovery of the polyps. But for the SIC, we are going to launch something that is right now is unmet. So, because the use of the saline water is not something that that help much the professor. The SAC play in favor to the patient, but let me say that play 100 times more in favor to the physician, because they can do the procedure safer, and they can do quicker, and they can do something that is extraordinarily revolutionary. Difficult to understand for people that are not familiar with the procedure, but let me say that SAC is something really new.
And then can I have another question on Cassiopeia?
The last question.
Why don't you spin it off to shareholders? If you would really believe in the potential of that company, obviously you would spin it off to shareholders and not spin it off as a secondary.
There's a very simple answer for this. The answer is the following. If that would have been a dividend in kind, it would have been extremely, problematic to do it under the Italian law, because there would have been the requirement of making a special assessment of what the market value was that in order to calculate the dividend, and we ended up assuming that it was just an impossible exercise because it's too risky. Then we would have done a transaction, and we may have had the Italian taxman discussing with us for ages on what exactly was the value that we had been distributing. So we said it's just too risky for Cosmo Pharma to enter into such a transaction. And no, that was something that we were discussing. Meanwhile, so didn't have the capacity of taking it as a single step. So we may have done that afterwards when we decided that this was the appropriate things to be done. And then besides, we also wanted to fund it. So we thought that as a matter of fact, a pure dividend, it wouldn't have made a lot of sense. We also would have liked to open it anyway to other potential investors. So we think it is more a framed transaction other than just a pure gigantic gift whose dimension would have been very difficult for us to understand. That there were issues of withholding tax on dividends, and it was just too complicated.
You're too early. You would get much more money a year from now.
Once more, is the deal not a year too early? You would get much more money if you have results of the phase 3 studies.
It is
in the interest of the company and of the old shareholders.
You are absolutely right, but you know, for us, it is. All, I think that anybody who has seen as Cosmos been managed over time, I hope it has appreciated that the company has always been trying to maximize the value while minimizing the risk. So it is true that it will make perfect sense to keep it completely in-house, but if it is successful, from the perspective of Cosmo Pharma standalone, it also makes sense to de-risk the company a little bit, and therefore it keeping 50% of the upside while giving away 50% of the risk. So we thought it was just balanced from the standpoint of Cosmo Pharma. That's the way we reasoned. And besides, we thought that, as you will see, that given the fact that we hope we'll be receiving support from existing Cosmo shareholders, we also thought that it makes sense to have them invest directly, because then if the appreciation is there, they will be the one who will substantially benefit out of that. So depending on how we are going to price that, and I think that we will price it in a convenient fashion, I hope that most shareholders will get the message that the reason why we're doing this is also because we would like them to participate to an opportunity. So it is a way of trying to accomplish several things in the meanwhile, to get a company substantially independent, to have a focused company on Derma, to have still the Cosmo shareholder inside of it as in Cosmo Pharma, and also the risk Cosmo Pharma from the perspective of whatever may happen in Cassiopeia.
Maybe just let me just make one more comment to that. First of all, you know, we're a small company, and we don't want to become a super large company as such. For next year, as Mauro said, we have the SIC and the Methylene Blue, and the project, which is the large GI project for next year, and this year's project is more or less the skin project. I don't think we'd be possible for us to handle two such mega projects at the same time and to execute them ideally. So from our perspective, we felt it made, in the allocation of time and opportunity, do this now and do the GI later.
Maurizio Bernasconi, Banca Ambelvi. A question regarding methylene blue. Can you give us a flare how much cost a traditional methylene blue endoscopy? So in order to compare it with your $120 US. And then don't you think that if you introduce now SICK 8000 will help the endoscopists to get to know your technology and therefore using the methylene blue once it's launched more than only 5% market penetration?
For sure. So we are very cautious, because let me say that make very difficult to project to figure out the potential of methylene blue, because let me say that should be 100%, but you know that it make difficult that the company can retain more than X. In terms of cost for the normal procedure in the old methylene blue, you cannot compare, because only the cost of catheter was $80, something that is incomparable, believe me. So it doesn't make any sense to compare MMX methylene blue with the old procedures. What makes a lot of sense, what exactly what you said. So in terms of potential, if the outcome of the trial will show a 10%, that let me say, when we talk about 10%, sometimes we completely under-evaluate the 10. In this case, as 10% over the colonic cancer. So that is, believe me, is a lot. Is a lot because just to show a significance in terms of statistical plan should be enough the 5%, not the 10%. But the positive outcome will drive the potential at the price of methylene blue. There are no doubts that you got the point. The SIC will help a lot the methylene blue, because, as I said before, in the SIC project, we are working for the physician, because it is what the physician needs. Could be helped by a product that can be, for the procedure of colonoscopy, everything easier.
And I see all your points to partner down together or in a...
Yeah. This is not half, yes. Not that.
Yes, just to complete the information. There is an indirect comparison that could be done. In our experience, there is that if you have a polyp that is 2 or 3 centimeters and you are unable to catch with the snare, you have to use a piecemeal technique, that is, breaking the polyps in pieces and then remove it singularly. Well, in this case, you can increase the cells that you leave on site with the possible restart of the polyps growth. And also, you use 40 to 60 minutes. A piecemeal requires at least 30 minutes. A snare requires 2 minutes.
Further questions?
Yeah.
Bill goes for Cassiopeia goes as you plan. What are you planning to do with the proceeds? And is there a major payback dividend for shareholders of Cosmo maybe in the pipeline? Thank you.
The answer is the company has a lot of projects. Clearly, when we discuss here a pipeline, we discuss disclosed a pipeline. Not all the things that happen in our labs are listed over here. So we have interesting plans for the future, and this is why we're looking for the proceeds. These are expansions plans, and the expansions plans are planned in such a fashion that if we can implement this structure, and this is also this structure and strategy, we would like to become, as we have said before, a kind of a hybrid holding company, meaning a holding company that is holding financial stakes, which basically are represented by its product, but in the meanwhile is a company that is expanding its proprietary pipeline and expanding its manufacturing capacities. Given all that, I think that if we are successful in executing the IPO, the Cosmo Pharma shareholders, yes, will also benefit from that, absolutely.
No other question.
There's somebody on the telephone.
Ah.
We have a follow-up question from Trung Yan. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my questions. I've only got two. The first one is, what is the outlook for the 2015 R&D spend? And the second one is, you mentioned the shares repurchased from the change of seats will be executed in April. Will these shares be cancelled or are they going to be held? Thank you.
Question, because I'm not sure I've understood the first question, is that the shares will be held. Those shares, we don't plan to annul them currently. If you could please repeat the first question. I'm not sure I understood it.
He wanted to know how much R&D is going to
be. Oh, just the outlook for the R&D spend.
Well, look, that depends. If the spin-off of Cassiopeia occurs, then the R&D expenditure is going to be within Cassiopeia to a substantial extent, namely the continuous R&D expenditure on the skin. Whereas we will retain, of course, the R&D expenditure for the gastro side. But on the gastro side, we are looking at the completion of phase three projects, and the other ones are still relatively early. So you could actually see the R&D expenditure on a consolidated basis next year declining.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over. Thank you for choosing Chorus Call and thank you for participating in the conference. You may now disconnect your lines. Goodbye.